Democracy Now! 20 years covering the movements changing America. The book about this thrilling history is now in paperback. Amy and co-author Dennis Moynihan will discuss it all with KPFA's Kat Brooks on Sunday, May 14th, that's Mother's Day, at 7 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church, located at 2407 Dana Street in Berkeley. Tickets available at brownpapertickets.com and our indie bookstores. That's May 14th, Amy Goodman.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, coming to you from outside D.C. on a tin can with strings. Yes. So, yes, powerful new moon. Welcome. The Goldman Awards last night for environmental brave humans that make us proud to be human was last night on the new moon in Taurus. We love activism wedding with animism. And before we dive into our completely fantabulous Egypt everything radio conferring, the People's Climate Movement in Washington, D.C. this Saturday, and of course Democracy Now! Will be covering it from D.C. along with some coverage of satellite marches from 7 a.m. to noon Pacific time. Yay! So more than perfectly, our radio show today is Animistic Activism, Everything's Alive, New Moon Radio. And I'm returning from Egypt, yes, shaking off the airplane cold, welcoming the return of new ancient allies, two of my favorite humans on the planet, Laura Kortner and Dr. Bob Hieronymus, that we may play Liberty Goddess Obelisk, Odalisk, Egypt, Real Isis, Washington, D.C., and the imminent Climate March. Their show, 21st Century Radio, began in 1988, so they are radio elders. The Visionary Activist Show is a mere 20 years old. Oh, that's nothing. So welcome, Laura Kortner.
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, that's good. We do what we can. And welcome Dr. Robert Hieronymus.
Great to hear your voice again.
That's great. Okay, I've got static at my end, but I will transcend it. I'm the one on tin cans and string, and you're the ones on grown-up radio. I'm with you both. But I have your wonderful package that you sent me. I'm wearing the turquoise right now, turquoise sacred to Hathor. And I open up your 21st Century Radio pamphlet and see, you know, your connection to Egypt and to Anwar Sadat and to Baltimore, you know, from whence you are cahooting with us, Baltimore's sister city relationship with Luxor and Alexandria, Egypt, and the letter from the mayor, and that you conferred with Egyptian President Anwar al-Sadat just before his assassination to discuss with him the importance of the pyramid and the eye and the triangle, symbolism on the reverse of America's great seal, an image, you write, that interested Sadat a great deal, and the subject of your completed doctoral dissertation a ways back. So, well, let's dive into Egypt. Yeah, and
thanks for mentioning those things, because they're also deeply interconnected with activism. Sadat knew he was not necessarily going to live very long. And he was my great hero, because I thought that anyone that could bring about that kind of a major change, and he did make it better. The world a better place for a while. But I had no idea that when we returned to Egypt, maybe for the fourth or so time, after he was assassinated, that most of them hated him. But we didn't know that when we were being bakshish to death and everything. And it was really hurt to find out that they just felt that what he was doing was wrong, and connecting it with Israel and laying that foundation. And it's no wonder that people within his own, distance there decided that they were going to take his life. And, you know, the most exciting thing that we learned about that, though, was about his wife, Jehan Sadat, who became a good friend of Zahara, my wife, and allowed her to, anytime she wanted, basically talk to her on the air. But knowing full well that she would not be able to tell the truth about his assassination and what really happened.
Now, we do have to supplicate to Hermes, because I will be tapping into you both telepathically, because just due to my own exile from radio studio while I build my own, contact me, oh listeners, if you want this radio show to continue, your voices to me are pretty staticky, but I'm gonna work with it. Can you hear me okay?
Now, we can hear you just fine.
Yes, you're just fine. Just fine, as Pogo would say. Do you know Pogo?
So we'll try to talk slowly and clearly for you.
Good. You just came in clearly for a second there. Okay, we'll work with it. The telepathy, the thing, all those things. But imploring Hermes. And let me just weave a little bit of context for why I'm so enthused to cahoot with you all, doing our Egypt, Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Berkeley, California, Los Angeles, everything connecting. And, of course, you are the authors of the fantastic book, The Secret Life of Lady Liberty, Goddess in the New World, that is such a great resource. Sometimes I just open it up in a divinatory fashion going, oh, look at that, the statue of Isis.
Yeah, it's good for that.
Yeah, sorry, say what?
I'm sorry, yeah, the book works well that way.
Okay, I'm sorry,
I'll try not to interrupt you from now on.
Okay, I will pretend I'm hearing you. We will carry on, and I aspire to have studios like yourselves at some point pretty soon. But it is the new moon, right? And this is the new moon in Taurus, about animism. Everything's alive, you know. And again, that's so strong. And one of the things I love to bring back from Egypt, the iconography is, say, a cobra. And I have a fantastic glow-in-the-dark green glass cobra. If a cobra is in front of one, or anything scary that's in front of one, it's an oppositional, like, kind of, ooh. If it's beside one, it's an ally. And if it's behind us, it's a protector. So I love this idea of the Aikido thing, of all of us thinking of something scary and swooshing it to be an ally, and then swooshing it behind us to be a protector. And I love what one of our guides said in Aswan. He said, what do you want protecting you or your house? Do you want a lion, a dog, a cat, or a snake? And I go, well, actually my house is full of Egyptian iconography, more than I really even noticed. I'm just surrounded by it, and I do have the solar disk with the cobras over the front door. And he said, good choice, because snakes never close their eyes. I'm like, wow. So the snake protective services, we never sleep, is literal. So I love that part. But so it is new moon, you know, it's a powerful time right now to talk with you both, because the moon in Taurus overhead in Berkeley is quintile, irresistible, humming eloquence to Neptune and Pisces. All the powerful imagery and iconography to which both of you are so dedicated and bring alive for us is eager to bound onto the world stage. And I thought, ooh, how great. In time for the climate march. And what I wanted to toss to both of you is, in Egypt, when we went up to Aswan to see the granite mines for the obelisks, which I also confuse with odalisk, but the obelisks, and I go, Washington D.C. has one of these, you know, and they were dedicated as Osiris's male member that was to fertilize Isis, and that's why I wanted to turn to both of you, going, and what shall we do on Saturday? how can we have the Washington Monument fertilize the real Isis, the goddess of nature?
Oh, you're asking us a question as to how to do that. I was enjoying what you were saying, taking advantage of your wisdom there, rather than using my head. Now, would you please repeat that question?
Oh, I was just intrigued that we were told by our guide, you know, the Osiris myth, that he's, you know, scattered by Set, and Isis goes to gather all the parts of his body, but his male member is missing, and that's why they made the obelisks, which was Osiris's male member. And I thought, well, we have the Washington Monument, you know, in D.C. How could that be brought alive to fertilize, you know, the ISIS, the positive ISIS part of our country? I just wanted to fling that out there to you both.
Well, that's a very powerful thing to do, and I think no, it is. And yeah. you know, when we're talking here, we're talking a little bit about alchemy right here, you know, on radio. The transformation, taking something which is a physical thing and then transform it so it can do some spiritual good. Is that what we're trying to do?
Keep going.
And when we do that kind of thing, it means that you've got to maintain your balance. And if we had a group of people together and we were well balanced from the standpoint of fine-tuning all our minds together in a short owl meditation, you could visualize this member ejaculate and shoot fire in the sky, so to speak, to open up other areas within the universe. So that would take... Now, that is a practical thing to do. But it would take a great deal of time and planning to accomplish.
Right. No, I know these are not flibbity-gibbet things. We are just planting seeds because it is this new moon and also Mercury retrograde, which is like being in the desert, and I just returned from the Sinai desert, and I understand that you and your beautiful wife were in the Sinai desert also several trips. And so Mercury retrograde conjoins Uranus today at 25 Aries, which is the sun of Pacifica. When Pacifica, this radio network, was founded, KPFA as the mothership, kind of the ISIS, the sun was at 25 Aries, whose image is a woman bursting with gifts more than she can hold. And right now, for us, you know, Mercury retrograde conjoining Uranus today through tomorrow exactly, powerful, you know, it's a revelatory time, and then Mercury will go forward and conjoin Uranus, forward motion, on the full moon, on May 10th, which is the Buddha's full moon, the moon in Taurus, moon in Scorpio, sun in Taurus, which is the invitation for invisible to enter into visible. So I go, oh, it's very powerful. Yeah, and yes, as you say, these are things that are deep things to wonder and to train. And maybe also to bring you in, Laura, because we were speaking last time we cahooted about our wonderful, esteemed ally, now an ancestor, David Ovison.
Oh, gosh.
And and his great book, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, that I've actually used as a handbook for guiding different marches through D.C., but he goes, it is a great book, and he does say that Washington, D.C. was dedicated really to Virgo and to Isis in some form. Do you want to pick up on that, Laura?
Well, you know, I'm really thankful you brought us on as you did right before the peoplesclimate.org is that website for that march this Saturday in Washington, because based on what you started with us last time we joined you, and thank you for having us a second time, as far as activating the energies of the Statue of Liberty in a deliberate way, that's what we're speaking about, in a magical, mystical way. And in fact, thank you, I've dug out my Dion Fortune books based on our last conversation. I'm inspired to read them all over again and look for that on audiobook. But I had, very coincidentally today, I had a conversation with a Peruvian shaman, a sun messenger named Willaru Huarta, who's on tour through the U.S. right now and will be in the Santa Rosa area actually this weekend. And he had a vision about the Statue of Liberty that is really energizing on the higher planes. But first, I want to tell you, did you notice that in London today, outside the U.S. Embassy, there were 100 people, women, dressed up as the Statue of Liberty in protest against our current president's 100th day of regime change? And it's just such a powerful photograph of all these Statues of Liberty in their moment of silence. It's a powerful, powerful protest image, and I expect we'll see a lot more of that in Washington, D.C. and around the country on the People's Climate Marches over the weekend. And also, incidentally, a few days ago, a UFO was spotted and photographed hovering over the Statue of Liberty itself. So very much in the news, activating the Statue of Liberty. I can't stop thinking about the end of that movie Ghostbusters 2, where you see her walking down the streets of Manhattan and sweeping away all the demonic forces. But in any case, yeah, the Washington, D.C. is definitely designed with some intentional patterning going on as an homage to Virgo and therefore to Isis in the sky. And Ovison has written some remarkable books. We've learned a lot from him. And in fact, bringing it back to Egypt, you know, Egypt's and their knowledge of science and harmonics and geometry and medicine, architecture in particular, sort of sprung out of nowhere. You know, we don't know where that came from, but it does lead complete, that's the evidence right there, the Great Pyramids and their geometric harmony of some kind of advanced civilization, alien, Atlantis, we don't know. But there was something that predates that, and you must have picked up on that when you were over there. You know, the Schwaller de Lubitsch research, the sophistication of the science and the geometry. And when it comes to numbers, they had that down to a religion. And I've just looked at the number 7 because we have 7 rays in the Statue of Liberty's crown. Right. And it can be related to this because it makes more sense than the prosaic explanation of 7 seas or 7 continents. Because in Egypt, it very simplified. 5 is the principle of life or the creative event. And 6 is that space-time framework in which the creation can happen. And then you get to 7, which is growth, or the Godhead, which is creating that time and space. So there's this 7-petaled flower symbol found on some of the earliest inscriptions, standing for Seshat, the female counterpart to Thoth. 7 is harmony and measure. And I thought that was wonderful in relation to the Statue of Liberty.
Ah, and whatever you just did then, I could actually hear you. It was very wonderful. If you did anything different in our homage to Mercury going, I think I can hear you. That's very good.
Wonderful.
That's good. And I think our audience can hear both all of us pretty well. It's just the wittiness of backstage Hermes here. But that's good. And we were also told when we went to Aswan and saw the mining of the, you know, obelisks, and how they embedded 7 into the process of excavating it, and that it also, the obelisks were then, these incredible, impressive things were then wafted down the river on 7 boats to get to Luxor.
Well, I'll be.
I'm sorry, say what?
I said, well, I'll be. I've totally forgot all of this. Because when I went up to Aswan there, weren't too many people there, but I was stunned at some of the obelisks that broke and fell. Did they still have them laying on the ground there at Aswan? No, where they were mining them. They had them huge ones that were never erected because they broke in the process of their making them.
I remember when we were writing United Symbolism of America, comparing the Washington Monument as an obelisk to the Egyptian obelisks.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Isn't it true that the Egyptian obelisks were made out of one complete stone? And of course, the Washington Monument is made out of, I don't know how many, but lots and lots of different stones, and metaphorically, out of many, one. And that's a big difference symbolically. Our obelisk isn't a true obelisk. It's made out of lots of many stones, and they came from all the different 50 states and all the different contributors, similar to the Statue of Liberty, in fact, in the fundraising where it came from the pennies of the school children. That's part of the completion of the Washington Monument. You know, also like the Statue of Liberty, it got stuck midway, or not even halfway. Incompleted because of financial fighting and infighting. It sat there as a stump for a couple of decades, didn't it, in the middle of the 1800s?
It certainly did.
Yeah, wow. That's why there's that line across it. You can see the difference in the coloration of the stone.
Right. So what does that elicit from you both about what is the purpose, do we think, of the Washington Monument? It's true, it's not one solid granite thing. It's not really. It's just. But the only other place. Well, that's not true. But it is modeled on the Egyptian.
Yes, it is. And as Lars said, out of many, one. That means that the many different stones could be different vibrations each, like the various cultures, the various types of human beings, the various types of living things, but they all manifest into one obelisk. That's quite an important story because it gives us our diversity, because that's where I think most people, well, those people who believe in our country realize that it's the diversity that gives us the kind of strength that we really need to hold this country together. We certainly need that together now. But it also goes into the symbolism of all things are one. And we are also one people. So it's a numerical thing as well, being 555 feet high, that was symbolic, especially to the Freemasons, because it relates to the three different initiations of the initiatory, from the beginning to the end, first, second, and third degrees.
Yes, and because I'm piecing it together like an ancient manuscript, I can hear every third word. I'm gonna rely on both of you to and fro in our ongoing experiment here too. But I do want to toss to both of you and hope it weaves in with what you just said. Well, I'm flying in the dark here, but it's worthy, because I couldn't hope for any two more, you know, excellent allies to fly in the dark with than yourself, Laura Kortner, and Dr. Robert Hieronymus. So part of my enthusiasm, right, is also the sky-earth story that's guiding now, that is so related to what you both are dedicated to and this beautiful book, The Secret Life of Lady Liberty, and so much of what it covers, you know, the rise of the feminine back into leadership. Mm-hmm. So right now, you know, where it's so both of you, you know, Venus is at the very last degree of the zodiac, 29 plus Pisces, kind of filling up on all powerful imagery, you know, throughout time that has ever moved humans to conscious kinship. And it's got a beautiful 60 degree collaborative, you know, relationship to the moon. So it's like, again, these things, you know, what you've been doing, the Statue of Liberty coming alive. And yes, I love that article that is on your Facebook page, Robert Hieronymus, that Laura just referenced, Amnesty activists dress as Statue of Liberty in anti-Trump protest. It's beautiful. And then see, on Friday, tomorrow, Venus enters Aries going, all right, woofiness, the symbols come alive and want to assume leadership in time for the climate march and everything else. So I just, you know, your book is so great and such a rich resource, and I only even, you know, the wonderful section, brief biographies of a few female leaders in the back going, so what are the qualities you would both want to call in now, you know, to our that our country may restore its, you know, sane reverence, and that sane reverence may assume cultural narrative lead again. Any qualities, you know, again, you've got so many, but any qualities, Laura, do you want to call in positive feminine Lady Liberty qualities now?
Yeah, of course. I'm going to use this opportunity to tell you more about this Peruvian shaman's message, because it fits into the question that you've just asked. And again, this is Willaru Huarta. He's a sun messenger. You may have heard of him. In fact, he'll be at the Center for Sacred Studies in Guerneville, California, near Santa Rosa this weekend, doing Pachamama drum healing circles and so on and so forth. But before he left on this trip to the United States, he did a meditation to learn what he needed to bring for his teachings specifically to this country. And he saw himself hovering over New York, and then he saw the Statue of Liberty broken in pieces on the floor. He heard this angelic type of voice over the broken statue. He said he didn't see her face, but his intuition saw her as the image of the Statue of Liberty. He described it as a very, very tall woman of mixed white, Native American, and black. I love that. She was just a very giant woman, and she said, "This is your work to do." So the Statue of Liberty on the floor in pieces, he translates this to mean that that's his job, to teach others, and then the others to also teach others, to show the path, and that the American goddesses that we have all around us are these activation points on the higher realms. That's where he's speaking and seeing these visions, and the goddesses being so powerful. He talks about, I'm sure you've heard about the prophecy of the condor, which is South America and the heart, and the eagle, which is North America and the mind, and how the two need to meet. They need to meet each other and work together. And we need that exchange to put the pieces together. So once we have some of our own integration inside ourselves and the freedom, we need to liberate from the ego. So we've got that liberation theme from the ego and the greed. Then in our right hand, we can carry the light like a torch for the rest of the humanity. And carrying, which is that sacred knowledge, helping humanity to awake and, as I said, liberate from the consciousness, from the ego, and from fear and greed and lust and all these limitations that are keeping us enslaved. And that's our karma. It's not our national karma particular to our nation, but to the whole world. But in our country, the goddess of America is like a great mother of this nation, and the Statue of Liberty is like our mother. She gives us the land and a place to stay. It's shelter for the nation, and she, according to this shaman, she lives in the fourth dimension and is manifesting love for her children, and that she is this main contact to this temple of the heart. And I found that remarkable, that this is coming through to him on an esoteric plane through the Statue of Liberty symbolism, which is very much like what we've been saying. If we could activate this image within our hearts as Americans, then perhaps we could become true leaders on the world stage through compassion and freedom to live in the right way.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
And we talked last time about there are 25 nations that have a Statue of Liberty based on our Statue of Liberty. And the only other station, not only other, but the one that doesn't is Russia. Russia is one of the few that do not. It's a world symbol now, because the symbolism of the Statue of Liberty that we've talked about last time, of course, is extremely powerful in bonding. It's a method by which we can come together, because as I don't want to keep repeating myself from before, but I think it's extremely important, one, that each and every one of us now learn how to meditate, prayer, pray, and number three, serve. Look around you. It is really time to do things now. The environment is getting much worse. The flooding is much worse. And you know what our president is saying, that this is no such thing as global warming and all this other stuff. It's pathetically cruel what's happening, with the poor getting poorer. And his solution to the problem is, hey, we're gonna make it so that you're only going to pay 15% taxes instead of 35. My Lord.
You're paving the way for the corporate state of America.
That's correct. So looking in through meditation and through prayer, and then seeing where you can fit in to help out, any of those things that touch your life, that you look around. Maybe it's just assisting elderly people in your neighborhood, or maybe it has to do with children. Because all of us need love. I've heard some Beatles say something.
All we need is love.
We all do. And a lot of people are going to be very much frightened because we are not prepared for what is ready to happen with Mom Nature. We're not prepared.
Right.
And it's going to cause great grief because we're not prepared.
Yes.
And that's why we need to look at these things.
One of our wonderful radio allies said climate change is inevitable. Adaptation is optional.
Absolutely.
So we're going to take a very short break. We're going to take a very short break right now. And I'm actually, I'm envious of you both and our audience who are hearing everything clearly. Erica, we're all backstage here in Extremely Live Radio. Erica, I'm going to call in on a phone line. So actually, I will be being hosted by my guest. in hopes that during this break, I'm going to call in on a phone line, so be prepared, Erica, and we will be right back after a very short break. Yay!
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 She shook the constellation that dazzled them crossed his eyes. She shook the constellation that dazzled them crossed his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Hold him down.
Shiny, 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 come blow my shiny horn. Ooh, shiny, 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 come blow my shiny horn. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, experimenting with Hermes to call into my own show. And our wonderful guests that I hope I can hear, and I envy the audience because you've been able to hear them, it is animistic activism, everything alive, new moon radio. I am returning from Egypt. My bodies are slowly wafting in. And we are honoring two of my new favorite ancient allies, Laura Kortner and Dr. Bob Hieronymus. So are you there? Are you there, team, Laura?
Any better, Caroline?
Oh, it's not really any much better. Okay.
Oh, not much better. Well, who knows, maybe we've attracted some other beings here in regards to this. I keep thinking about President Sadat.
Yeah.
Because the way he and I came together was most unusual. And I was sitting in the embassy one day, the Egyptian embassy, because we were starting to set up the sister-city relationship. And I heard an argument going on in the background. And it was pretty ferocious. And you don't normally hear that kind of stuff in an embassy. And so there was a lot of frustration, and I asked, the guys that I was working with, what's going on? He said, well, there's been a big problem. And the problem is this. Anwar Sadat asked the State Department over 6 months ago, perhaps maybe a year ago, what the meaning of the pyramid and the eye in the triangle is on the back of the $1 bill.
Yeah.
And we have not been able to get an answer from the State Department. And so some heads were going to roll at that particular time because they thought that everyone knew what those symbols were in the United States, but they didn't. So fortunately, I had just you talk about synchronicity. I had just completed my doctoral thesis and it was just approved, and I had a copy of it underneath my arm in the Egyptian embassy, proudly looking at it. And I asked them, I think the answer is right here in this book that I'm holding. So, of course, they grabbed it, ran to the back. They called Egypt, told them it's all different. Everything is okay. That set up, eventually, a meeting with him at Georgetown University, in which we were appreciating him and what he accomplished. And I had one last gold coin that had the front and the back side of the Great Seal of the United States on it. And I had it in my pocket, and I was afraid to bring it out. But when I was in line to speak with him, and I pulled it out, and I gave it to him, he looked at it, and then he lectured me. He didn't remember or connect that I was the person that met and worked with them in Egypt and stuff. And he said, "Take a look at this." He was like a teacher. He said, "Take a look at this. Look above the eagle's head. What do you see?" And I said, it's a six-pointed star. And I said, "Yeah, but it's a six-pointed star now, but it was used to be 13 six-pointed stars in a six-pointed star pattern. And we changed that." He said, "That's right." And he said, "That's Israel. Turn over this coin. Let's look at it." And he said, "Look at that pyramid. That's Egypt."
Right.
"Egypt and Israel on one coin in gold. You take a look, look at that through symbolism." And I was just thrilled. I was really thrilled because that's basically his dependence upon that important symbolism cost him his life. And it's a story that basically has not really been told, and unfortunately, I was so stoned, I mean literally physically stoned, by hearing someone that I admired so much say things to me that my heart had told me years and years and years ago through other research. And that man no longer existed because of what he believed and did. So when I think of Egypt, I cannot help but think of all of those cups of tea we had to have. Were you driven around by various political folks or when you were there? I don't know if you heard me.
I'm telepathically. This is an experimental thing. I'm hearing every other word. I'm counting on you and Laura to somehow to and fro it the thing, because we need to go back to the drawing board on the technical part of this. But the audience is hearing everybody. You're hearing yourselves. I'm hearing every third word.
Caroline, can I ask you a question?
Yes, that would be great.
What did you bring back from Egypt that you can teach the United States in this new direction that we are headed?
I do love, you know, since we're stuck with the misnomer ISIS, right, by the Western press, which is really the word for Daesh, I love, you know, in one of the myths, there's a great threat to the earth. The chariot of the sun, the horses are broken loose and they're galloping towards the earth, and the earth is going to be consumed. It's kind of like us now. And the gods and goddesses go around to everybody and go, "Can you help? Can you help? The earth is going to be destroyed by the sun, by global warming, basically." And finally, they have nobody to turn to but Set, the bad underworld figure, and they go, "Oh, Set, can you help us? Can you harness the horses of the sun and save the world?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure, no problem." So I love this as a kind of quality of the Middle East, which is, you know, turn to everybody. And that theme, again, of what is in front of you as an opposition, invite it to be your ally, you know. And even the most darkest up to no good, you know, can you do this good thing? And, you know, it ties into part of my, trickster guidelines that I was taking down from Mount Sinai to supplant the grumpy commandments that were actually stolen from the Egyptian Book of the Dead, which is whatever we speak to one another is the part of them we're inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves. So even in the Egyptian mythology is, you know, when all else fails, ask your enemy to help save the world. So that's part of what I want to kind of bring into play. Does that amuse you both?
I love that.
Wow, that's powerful. That is really powerful.
You heard me, and I can hear you now, too.
Well, I'm glad I heard. But that's really, that is really a pretty solid alchemy there.
You never know when an enemy will turn into an ally, in other words.
And you can encourage them to become
perceived
allies.
Perceived ally,
right?
Enemy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's the syncretism, you know, again, part of what you both do so beautifully and what you do, you know, in The Secret Life of Lady Liberty and in the fact that she also, there's so many stories that go into the making of her and that you both extrapolate into what we need now, you know, but this, you know, Jupiter presiding over the night sky, and I got to see Jupiter all night under the Bedouin desert, just sleeping on a little thin mat, you know, just on a little sand dune between two rocks, going, I could live here. And I realized that the desert is entheogenic. The reason that people take psilocybe mushrooms and many things of which I'm fond is to feel like you're in the desert, because it was so dazzling. The silence was so dazzling. It was like wanda, 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 wanda. And to, you know, to take microdoses of LSD or psilocybe, it wouldn't change anything. You're in the desert. Like, well, but so all night I got to see Jupiter presiding over the night sky. You know, it was so exciting, the sky story. I could hardly sleep going, there's Jupiter and I'm in the desert with the Bedouins. It's fantastic. But Jupiter says, you know, syncretism is a sacrament. And so I love this, you know, Bodhisattva, coyote, Egypto, Aikido alchemy, right? I mean, we want to blend everything. And so from the Egyptian iconography of, like, invite something from oppositional in front, Aikido guided swoosh, swoosh. You know, it's like the Aikido people say, don't block, but guide. Swoosh, over here, you know, speak to the part of somebody we want to invite to the party, going, there you go. So these things do take practice, as you were saying, you know, and reminding us, Robert Hieronymus, you know, when I was saying, can we activate the Washington Monument? You go, this is a serious thing that would take quite a lot, you know, really dedicated this is not some flibbity-jibbit radio hour. And I go, yes, of course you're right. Of course you're right. Yes, that's true. We are not New Age dingbats. No, deeply dedicated. We're just touching on these things, not for presumption or status or hubris, but just to wonder, right? So anyways, but Jupiter is so powerful right now. Jupiter's degree is, its image is a boat dock wrecked by storms is getting repaired, rebuilding the entire world. We go,
What degree is Jupiter?
What? Jupiter is at 15 plus Libra retrograde. So right now, you know, part of your dedication and what resonates in all of our hearts is return to go back into our bookshelves, to go back into historic knowledge, to go back into wisdom traditions, because they all want to be invited and teased into practical application now, right? So Jupiter's retrograde, retrieve, you know, these stories and guiding systems of antiquity and knowledge, like as you said, And someday when I can hear everybody, I do want to do more about, you know, the harmonics, the architecture, the geometry of Egypt. I went to a great conference in your city, Baltimore, astrology conference, where I went to a great lecture on Egyptian geometry, and it's like, oh God, it's so smart. And you realize, you know, that is also when people take DMT or ayahuasca, you see the building blocks of creation. You see the geometry, and it's like you see Egyptian geometry. It's like, oh, that's but to tease all of these things back into pertinence, you know, to find, you know, parts of human wisdom that make us proud rather than ashamed. But they're all stirring, you know, in you and in your radio ministry, and you know, out there, and both of you are so cultivated, erudite, you know, and everything's alive now, and it's like, who wants to come back in? You know, what wisdom traditions to dance and to syncretize, not to lose their uniqueness, but to blend with everything now. That's why I say Bodhisattva Coyote, you know, and Egypto Alchemy Aikido, everything again in an informed way. But
you know, can I say hello? I'm saying hello to you. Can you hear me?
Hello?
You...
Never mind.
Something's... David Overson just popped in my mind.
Yeah.
From listening to what you had to say, because he used to talk to me about Jupiter all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because I have Jupiter conjunct Leo rising. So he lectured me over and over and over on that, and it really brought back, you know, when you... I'm sorry he passed on. He's a very mysterious man, truly an initiate in the old way of really being initiated into something, not just joining an organization. And I sure do miss him a great deal.
Well, were you done? I didn't want to jump over some story. But your experiences in the Egyptian desert, Caroline, sounded to me like what happened to Auguste Bartholdi in the Egyptian desert when he was traveling there on his version of the Grand Tour. He's the sculptor of the Statue of Liberty, of course. I like to bring it all back to the Statue of Liberty. When he was 21 years old, I told about a statue he tried to sell to the ruler of Egypt that people compared to the Statue of Liberty, but this was done many years earlier, where he really got the inspiration to do this giant statue was in Egypt, because he and four other young French artists traveled across Egypt for 9 months. They also stopped in Nubia and Arabia, Ethiopia, and they dove into the culture. You can see them in the photos looking like natives. They were wearing the traditional Egyptian galabiyah and the kaftans, and the trip made a really lasting impression on him, because it was in Egypt that he felt that emotion that stirs, as he called it, stirring in his breast as he was beholding the enormity of the Sphinx and the pyramids, and in particular the Colossi of Memnon. And he wrote in his book, this is what he said. He said, "We are filled with profound emotion in the presence of these colossal witnesses that are centuries old, of a past to us that is almost infinite, and at whose feet so many generations, so many million existences, so many human glories have rolled in the dust." And he could very well have been talking about his own future Statue of Liberty here, because he talked about their kindly, impassable glance that seems to ignore the present and be fixed upon an unlimited future. And of course, he's trying to make his statue as timeless as these monuments in Egypt. That's why he deliberately crafted an androgynous face and this timeless expression. That's the tools of the artist that they have to associate to a colossal concept like liberty and associate that with eternity. And incidentally, that androgynous fierce expression is another way that we connect the Statue of Liberty to the Black Madonnas, those mysterious images that appeared throughout Europe in the Middle Ages. He had only one other very, very large work of art. It's called the Lion of Belfort, which is modeled after the Sphinx. It was completed in 1880 in Belfort, France. It's 72 feet long by 36 feet high. It's like this lion. It looks like it's carved right out of the side of a mountain. It was done in honor of the town of Belfort, which had resisted the Franco-Prussian, the invasion of the Prussian army for like 100 some days. And so this Lion of Belfort and the Liberty Enlightening the World, these are showing that he mastered what he learned in Egypt when he was studying the monuments. And even though he was unable to sell his 86-foot statue of a peasant woman, Egypt Bringing Progress to Asia, that was the title of that statue. He finally did get it to go up in New York, the Statue of Liberty.
Right. And again, carry on, because I can almost hear him.
Oh, yes.
But I'm sure it was great. I can't wait to listen to this show. that's really good. Bringing home and this syncretism, and I guess, you know, I'm just diving in on top of you. Guide me. But I do so love, both in true and slightly faux mythology that Washington, George Orwell wrote in Down and Out in Paris and London that Washington was based on Plato's map of Atlantis. And I remember going on one tour, the Afrocentric tour of D.C., in which they said that, you know, Washington was designed to resonate with ancient Egypt. I'm like, all right, and if it's not true, let's make it true. I like that idea. In any case, you know, what you both are making clear and your profound and mysterious connection to Anwar Sadat is that, you know, we do want to syncretize. We want the ancient, and we realize what a young whippersnapper country this is, going, oh, you know, compared to ancient, deep knowledge. But I did want to bring in something also, you know, in our animistic hearts and the rewedding of animism and activism, is that, you know, the Egyptian thought forms very powerful, and even the first night I was there, just in a kind of, you know, airport hotel, but the judgment, the weighing of the heart against the feather, really came alive. I mean, it was like I had this, you know, enacted experience of everybody, you know, to whom I must make amends throughout my entire life, and everybody, you know, I mean, just it was very powerful. And I did run across, you know, that beautiful papyrus, you know, painting of the soul being weighed against the feather, the alligator eager to eat any soul that was heavier than a feather. And I go, wow. But what I wanted to talk to you both is, as we go through the kind of history of Egypt, there's great knowledge, but there's also all the players in the modern world of destruction and difficulty have always been with us. There's always been Daesh, you know, the next regime coming in and hacking out the names of the predecessors and wanting to destroy the past, but never with the degree of technological destruction that we have in the modern world.
That's true.
But how do you think, you know, all those leaders who, you know, would accept, you know, they would pay for the right hand of the enemies, and the many pictures of standing on the, you know, your enemies are below you, and then they were like, oh, people are cheating with the hands, now we want tongues, you know, and we go, how were their hearts lighter than a feather, we wonder? I don't know. I mean, the secular and the esoteric, you know, weaving in a mysterious way, and I await your answer, and we'll listen to it on replay as well. is it something that you wonder about? Going, there's been the Daesh, there's been the, you know, murders and intrigue and so on, you know, interspersed throughout the dynasties. How is their heart lighter than a feather, do you think?
Well, I did a this is very interesting, because I did a mural inside of the Ruscom Community Health Center that my wife founded, which tells this story of the feather being weighed. And I've often thought myself, because we have a replica of the Tutankhamun throne chair in this room. It's a meditation room, and it's been there for maybe 30 some years. More than that. And if I broke the rules and regulations once and sat in that chair.
Right.
And I turned that chair towards that wall, because that little story scared me to death. Because I knew I was not worthy. And most other people would probably be the same. So what kind of a person does it take, really, to have your soul lighter than a feather?
Mm-hmm.
The only kind of being, I think, would be a master. Well, masters in different ways, from different secret societies, but mainly a very advanced being. An advanced being is all about peace and love. And that's one of the things that always puzzled me about all this Egyptian symbolism, because much of it is very harsh and violent. And yet, I remember the stories I used to hear, not just from Egypt, but India, in which a master is on the battlefield. Say, I'll give you names. Master Kutumi is on the battlefield. Master Kutumi is all wise and all powerful and that kind of thing. And he sees out there another army, and he wants to defeat that army. He must defeat it in such a way, to be a master, that they lose the fewest number of men on his side and the fewer number of people killed on the other side. That's quite mastery from that standpoint. And I think the quality of human beings, especially in regards to what we were talking about in ancient Egypt and what really went on in the Great Pyramid, you know, especially the sarcophagus. Did you go inside the sarcophagus?
Did I go inside the sarcophagus?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that was possible.
Oh.
No, we did go inside the pyramid chamber.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I bribed my way.
Uh-huh.
And that's easy to do. You just have to have hundreds of pounds. Yeah, I mean, you know.
Right.
You pulled out a couple hundred pounds, you go. Anyway. The deal was I would be given an hour alone in the Great Pyramid in this sarcophagus, because I had read all of the other stories of people who were in the sarcophagus, who left their body, saw their meaning and purpose in life, and then returned to the sarcophagus, and it changed their life totally, because they then had meaning and purpose in life. And that's what I was testing. I wanted to see that. However, the real problem was the guy that I bribed wanted more. And so he would be coming back every 5 to 10 minutes, interrupting my progress.
Mm-hmm.
So I hardly got anywhere at all in this wonderful experience for hundreds of pounds. But I know other people, too, have tried this experiment. I think it was Paul Brunton. Brunton.
I remember him. Right?
Yeah, remember? Yeah, he in the Great Pyramid. And it's just, especially the work, I just love the work. And I know you know the work of Dr. Robert Schock, right?
Hmm.
No?
Dr. Robert who?
Schock. S-H-O-C-H.
Okay.
Is that familiar?
Keep going.
It doesn't. Okay. Well, anyway, he's one of the great leading lights in Egyptology today, which points out that the Sphinx is much older than we thought, at least 8,500, maybe 13,000, maybe even more. And that it wasn't necessarily used the way we think it was, etc. He's really done some excellent work. That's the reason why I pointed that out. But going back to this image of the feather and the perfection is the key in regards to trying to be free and freed from having to return in the body, which is what that little story is all about. Your karma.
We're going to have to exit on the feather and the heart, I guess, with a blessing that may all of us, you know, measure our heart against the feather. The judgment day is not one day, but ongoing, as the tarot card Key 20 would teach us. And thank you both for being such great, good sports, and I can't wait to listen to the show.
Carry on.
Well, let us know. Let us know how you feel.
That's wonderful. Jerry. All right, thanks so much to our splendid guests, and I'm envious of our audience who could hear them, Laura Kortner and Dr. Bob Hieronymus. The fantastic book, The Secret Life of Lady Liberty, Goddess in the New World, is really wonderful. Thanks always to Erica Bridgman. I'm Caroline Casey, and we will be aspiring to clearer lines next week due to some wonderful Mercury miracle. Thank you so much, team. Woof.
When you think of the hard knock, you think of that.
Station of Resistance.
One of the most phenomenal beats of all time.
Good information and great radio.
News, views, and hip-hop.
What? Do it the way you feel it.
Hard knock.
Hard knock.
Hard knock. Radio.
Monday through Friday.
And it's from 4 to 5 p.m. knocking hard in your area.
94.1 KPFA.
Only revolution is our evolution.
So good.
Yes, one and all are invited to the parking lot sale in the KPFA parking lot at Berkeley Way between Martin Luther King Jr. Way and Milvia. Proceeds benefit the First Voice Apprenticeship Program. There'll be CDs, books, clothing, miscellaneous items, and lots of fun. You can browse, you can buy, you can enjoy an afternoon of entertainment. There'll also be station tours. For more information, call 510-848-6767, extension 235. That's 510-848-6767, extension 235.
Yes, you can share this fun and help our First Voice program on Saturday, April 29th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the KPFA parking lot.
We hope to see you there.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA.